honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, marking National Prisoner of War and Missing in Action Recognition Day through the memories of two World War II prisoners of war. Pascual Reyes would spend 7 months in captivity after experiencing combat with the 36th Infantry Division in North Africa, Italy, and France.
They captured me because we were in two buildings. I was in one building and they were in the majority of the guys were in this big building. And then to the right was a forest, and to the back of them, there was forest. And I told them, we're going to be down there. If you guys start going down, it's going to start raining. It's getting dark, dark. We'll engage the guys, the enemy. We'll engage them for a while. Then we're going to start running back over there that way. About that time, this jeep comes in, and they were shooting all over. But they didn't get him. He was a captain. We told him to get the hell out to the back, to run over to the forest. We started engaging the enemy. Well, of course, you know, just a little while, somebody in English told us, you're Americans, better give up now. You haven't got a chance. Plain English, good English. Then he talked to us in Spanish, and he told us, you know, that we didn't have a chance in Spanish. I said, what the hell is this? About that time, a big tank comes, stays over there. So what we did, we gave up. But the rest of the guys had taken off. They escaped. Some of them, but some of them were still captured.
How many were there in the group that you were in that were captured there?
Oh, about 5 or 7, something like that.
But you knew you guys were outnumbered and surrounded.
Oh, yeah. With that tank, if we would have done a couple of shots, that tank would have blown us up. I wouldn't be here. So I told the guys, what's up to you? I'll leave it up to you. You want to keep on or you want to give up now? I said, there's no chance, remember. That tank is up there. We haven't got a chance.
Well, and before you got captured, you were wounded. What happened there? Tell me about it.
Well, what happened is that I got wounded, you know, I don't know if it was a bullet or a piece of that stuff. I hit my butt. You know, most of the time you get hit in the butt, and I did. I couldn't walk very much. I couldn't run that much. Then they wanted me to carry a German when I got captured because I couldn't move very much.
Because you got captured not long after you're wounded, yeah. So your left side is still in a lot of pain?
Yeah. Uh-huh. They got me real bad, you know, and I couldn't move. I didn't want to shoot because, I couldn't move. I knew that if I shot, I was going to be killed because I couldn't run and hide behind the trees and all that. So like the German said, just throw your rifle out. It'll be clear.
Well, maybe you can walk us through what it was like from there, because I'm sure you had no idea what to expect when you're going to be a prisoner.
I didn't expect nothing. I knew that I was captured. I didn't know if I was going to be killed because they told us, you know, that be careful because some of these Germans are very handy with their rifles or pistols. And they don't care. They'll knock the hell out of you. But they captured me, and they took me to a barn because it started raining. Some of us, they didn't keep us together because we were quite a bit of us, about 200, I think. They had a lot of hate, and some of these Germans were resting inside the barn. Why fight? There's nothing for me to do right now. I went to sleep. In the morning, they marched us to this place, prison place. Before they did that, they interview us and all that. He was a mean little guy. You know, all we said were like, everybody, your name, rank, and serial number. And we stuck with it. And we stuck with it, period. They wanted to know how many divisions or what company and all that. We didn't say nothing. Slapped the hell out of us.
Wait, I want to make sure people hear that. You said they slapped you.
Oh, yes. They slapped us. A couple of times. They did that because they were trying to hurt us, to scare us. See, we would talk, see? I knew that. So they sent me to a prison camp where I met the rest of the guys, and they were aviators. And they I talked with this young aviator, and he told me, he said, I was wounded, and my plane came down, and I got hurt. But they took care of me here in the hospital. You'd be imagined, doctors there, German doctors, good doctors that took care of the people. Anyway, we were in that camp, and the Nazis would come around in the car, and they would go through the camp. check everybody out, make everybody stand out. Then they would send out the dogs in there to all the buildings. They were looking for a radio. These guys, these engineers, we picked up what they told us to pick, and they made a radio. And they had it there and right in the kitchen. There was a post there, a wooden post. And I don't know, this guy was very smart. How he dug a little thing and they had that thing in there.
He hollowed out part of the post to hide the radio inside?
Yeah.
And the Germans never found it?
Never found it.
That was your connection to the outside world.
Yeah, we used to hear British broadcasting, and they would tell us exactly how far people were. So we were just taking it easy in prison. We didn't do nothing to arise the Germans. That's the way we kept it until the people came in, you know.
One of the methods of transportation he had experienced was the infamous 40-8 boxcar, big enough for 40 men or 8 horses. But how many prisoners you think you had packed in there?
Oh, I don't know, because he was full. I mean, he was full. And guys were sick and wounded and whatever, you know. So I got up to the corner of the cart so I could breathe in a little window that had a, because most of those guys were sick, throwing up and all that. They were very in bad shape. And then our own planes came in straight fast. The train stopped, you know, and they took us off. Our airplanes kept strafing us until they seen all the prisoners. Then they stopped. Then they put us back in the corner in a train. And then we kept going then to the prisons.
When those American planes were strafing, did they kill some of the prisoners?
I suppose so, yeah. I think they did. Yeah, because the train had a lot of prisoners. I'm pretty sure that some of them got hurt in the back. There was a tunnel. We were close to that. Some of us got in there.
You went and hid in the train tunnel?
Yeah, we got in the tunnel, and our guards too. But this place came around a couple of times, strafing back and forth until they found out, I guess, that they had to lay off, you know. We were prisoners.
What was the hardest thing for you about being a prisoner?
The hardest thing for me to be a prisoner was that I was a prisoner in the first place and I couldn't move. I escaped twice from a work detail, but I didn't know which way to go. So I got into the work detail, going back. Somebody told me which way to go. But then when I went out again from this work detail, this Puerto Rican went with me. I didn't care for it, and nobody to go with me. And this Puerto Rican, he was in a tree, and this kid seen him. And this, so stupid, killed the kid. But by that time, I swung out of there and went back straight off, and he went into the work detail. And I was scared then, because they were all police, and the Germans were all over. They found this guy, they killed him. Oh, I said, no, I ain't going to go out no more. I'm liable to get caught and killed, you know.
So you had been out on a work detail and snuck off by yourself? You're all alone?
Yeah.
But because you didn't know which way to go, when you saw that crew again, you joined back up?
Yeah, I went back. They told me which way to go if I wanted to leave. I said, no, I'm not going to leave no more. You know, I'm not going to take no chances like that. Because they get me, I'll be shot right there.
And you knew that because you saw that happen to him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Was there a time where your family didn't know what had happened to you?
Yes. When I got captured, they didn't know for a long time that I had been captured already.
So they probably thought you were dead.
Yeah. The Red Cross let them know. They went over there to the house and let them know that I had been captured.
So while you were in captivity, which was quite a while, if you look at late September to end of April, a little more than 7 months?
Something like that.
That's a long time when you don't know when it's going to end, right? How did you pass the time? How did you remain hopeful in the midst of that kind of situation?
You wouldn't believe it, but I did exercises. This guy and me would shadow box against a wall and do exercise in place, you know. And all the time, every day we did run push-ups. And that's the way I kept busy.
Did you ever have days where you thought, I might not ever get out of here?
Yes. You're there, you know, and you never know what the Germans could do. If they started losing, I figured that they would shoot us, you know, like they shot the rest of some of those guys. We didn't know, you know, for sure what these Germans would do, you know. If they would get revenge or before they would be captured, I figured they would shoot us. And then with those little machine guns, you couldn't escape. I told myself, if there's rifles, I'll take a chance and run the heck out of me. But machine guns, no. No way.
So while you were in the prison camp, you had another bout of malaria?
Yes, I got another bout of heavy malaria. I was sick. I thought I was going to die because I had been, you know, the food wasn't that good. And then you're weak, very weak. There were some British soldiers there, and they kept me going, wetting my lips and giving me a little water because I would get sick if I drink a lot of it, just a little bit. I would feel okay. And I don't know where the hell they found out those Erbine pills or whatever you call them, those yellow pills, and they gave me some. The malaria started easing off. After that, they gave me another two pills, and before I know it, I didn't have no more malaria. And I could drink a little bit more water. That's the way I went, with a little bit more water every day. That's the way I went until I got Patton came in.
Those fellow prisoners of yours, those British guys, they really did save your life.
Yeah, they did. You know, I looked for their names. I wanted to know their names, and I could never find them. Never. I was in Europe one day, you know, and I was in a train, and I was telling these people. He says, that little town, that village is close to us. Do you know their name? We'll take them for you. But they never did, of course, you know. But they saved my life. They gave me those pills. Those headaches went away. See, you get the chills, and then you get the headaches. You get those headaches very heavy. Then you get really, really hot. I mean, your body can't stand that.
Have you ever had any recurrences of that in the years since the war?
Only one time when I came back after the service at my house. I was sitting down, and all of a sudden, I started going like that.
You mentioned until Patton came in, and there's
famous
photographs of Patton in his Jeep coming through the gate at Mooseburg, Stalag 7A. His son-in-law, I think, had been a prisoner there. But what was that like for you, that experience of having months and months of being a prisoner, not knowing freedom, and then to have these Americans, including one of the most famous Americans in the war, and set you free? Tell me about what that time was like.
You see that thing, the General Patton coming in? You know, he's a rough and a bad mouth, everybody. You know. Oh, man, you seen him like... He was the greatest in this world. He said, I would say he was my angel, my guardian angel. And the guy came through that camp, and he said, bring out all those Germans out of here, because the Germans were hiding, you know. They had to come out, all of them. Boy, he went around and cut the hell out of them, and he said, you know, he was going to kill each and every one of them. You know, he said he was bad mouth, you know. He got in his Jeep again, you know. Here we go. But I was so, so happy, like something had been lifted out of my shoulders. That man was tough, but he was a gentle giant. He was what you call a man, a general. They took us to the airport there, close by. There was an airport, you know, it was hidden, you know. You couldn't see it, but it was there. And the American transport planes came around. Boy, they were good flyers. They come around the field, one by one, then another turn, all the planes lined up. Then they took us, they gave us a ride all the way to France. They took us up to the doctors. They had a big, big building. They had a physical, a shower, a haircut, and I mean that they went through everything in our body. Like I said, they gave us a haircut and a bath, new clothes. Man, I felt like I was a king there. We were back with our people, and they treated us like taps. Then they sent us into the hospital boats, you know, the ones that were going to bring us back. The same thing with those sailors. They had Marines in there and sailors, and they treated us taps. Man, it was good. Good meals all the way, all the steaks you wanted, whatever. But we couldn't eat very much steak. On account of stomach. Yeah, we had those shrunken stomach. You had to eat in one line chocolate, all the chocolate you could drink, and eggnog, and that's all. After so many days, they would change you to another line where you could eat a little bit more, a little more heavy. Then you got into a steak line. That was good. When you hit that steak line, that was for it. That was forever.
What was it like to get back to America again after you were a prisoner for so long?
When I see the Liberty, of Station of Liberty, I cried. I actually cried. Not only me, the rest of the guys.
He would experience tears of a deeper depth decades later when his son Ronnie, a 19-year-old Marine, was killed in action in Vietnam. Those 58,000 names on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall always held incredible meaning for Pascual Reyes.
And I want people to know that those names is a human being that was in this world years back. They're gone, but for a reason, for freedom, for the freedom they want, and for the freedom they have, all everybody. That's what I want them to know.
Well, I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for your service to our country and for the price that you helped pay for that freedom. Is there something that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
Well, like I said, my son, I want him to, the people to know why those names are there, because they gave their life for the freedom we have today, not just because they went and fought a war. That's the freedom you have, the freedom we all have, and they shouldn't forget them. They should honor them as much as they can. That's why.
I told you our perspective might be a little different. By the end of the program, we heard from two ex-prisoners of war who are no longer with us in 2023 as we mark National POW MIA Recognition Day, but whose stories can help shape the way we face every day. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.